Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rounding Third Sports. I'm your host, Steve, and let's get started. Today is going to be a jam-packed episode of NBA playoffs and Major League Baseball. This might be one of the slowest times in regards to sports. You know, obviously, we're in the middle of the NBA playoffs. That's a big deal to a lot of people. We're in the middle of the Major League Baseball season. Still in the beginning parts, teams are still trying to feel each other out. We're trying to see who's going to be a real contender, who's not. So it's just kind of warming up right now in terms of the Major League Baseball. We're starting to get to the OTAs for the NFL, the spring practices for college. So there's not a lot of new NFL content right now. And same thing with college. College is kind of both basketball and football. In terms of important news, really is kind of on a hiatus, I would say, during this time period. So I had to try to figure out something because I can't have an episode where I literally just give the update of the NBA playoffs, give the update of the MLB standings, and take up my full time frame. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to go through and I am going to talk about the NBA playoffs and the series that are going on now. And we're going to look a little bit more in depth today at the NBA, but I'm also going to look at the NBA playoff history. And we're going to look at some records. We're going to look at some information about the NBA playoffs in history. And then also, probably to close out today's episode, I'm going to do a This Day in Baseball History. It's something I've never done on this podcast. It's something that I do like to look at. Not every day, but it is something I like to look at from time to time just to see kind of what happened in the past of significance. And so we'll go through that today. I found a pretty good informational website for that. And so we'll look at that as well. So let's go ahead and let's just jump right into the NBA playoffs. So obviously we're right in the middle of the first round. So let's break down these series. So we're going to start in the East with the number one and number eight seed. So Philadelphia, Washington. Philadelphia is up 2-0. They won game one by 7 points. They won game two by 25 points. Game three now, I don't see being any different. I think Philly continues to control this series and we will have probably by Monday, we will have the end of this series. I'm predicting a sweep here. Should be no surprise, no shock there. So right now in this series, the leaders from each team, Ben Simmons is leading the Sixers he's averaging a triple-double in the first two games. 14 points, 12 rebounds, 11.5 assists. And then for Washington, Bradley Beal is currently the leader with 33 points, averaging 33 points, 7 rebounds, and 4.5 assists. Philadelphia controls all three of the main stats averages for the series, so points, rebounds, and assists. And they are just looking to really control what is going on in this series. Obviously, the series comes with some drama, as apparently just about every series has had this year. But I'd say by Monday, we'll be talking about Philadelphia advancing to the second round. All right, let's look now at the number two seed. We're going to look at the Brooklyn Nets against the Boston Celtics. So that's the two seed versus the seven seed. So we are through three games on this series, Brooklyn leading 2-1. So Brooklyn won game one by 11 points. They won game two by 22 points. And then they just lost game three by 6 points. So Boston making it a little bit more of a series, not allowing for the sweep to happen. But I would say that Boston doesn't win another game in this series. Most likely come Tuesday night, the series will be over. By chance, it could go all the way to Thursday. There's no way this series goes seven games. But there's always that chance that Jason Tatum helps force a game six. But my prediction, it goes through five. Brooklyn wins the next two and wraps it up on Tuesday night. The leaders for this series, Kevin Durant is averaging 32.3 points a game, 9.7 rebounds, and 2.3 assists, while Jason Tatum is averaging 27 points, 4.3 rebounds, and 4.3 assists per game. And Brooklyn does Brooklyn is leading in all three of the categories averages too. So points, rebounds, assists, although these are much closer than what Philly and Washington is. Brooklyn only leads in rebounds by an average of 1.3 and assists by 0.7. So Brooklyn's hanging tight with them, which is shocking. You know, no Jaylen Brown. Obviously, you're facing the triple-headed monster of Kyrie, Kevin Durant, and James Harden, among others, obviously. It'll be interesting to see how the rest of the series goes. But I don't see there being any way that Boston wins another game. All right, let's go now to the three seed, and that is the Milwaukee Bucks against the Miami Heat. So, gotta wait for it to catch up here. Milwaukee leads 3-0 and could possibly close out, and most likely will close out the series tonight. So Milwaukee won game one by 2 points in overtime. They won by 34 points in game two, and they won by 29 points in game three. So most likely tonight they're going to, or this afternoon actually, that game starts in just over an hour from time of recording. So by the time some of you listen to this, that series most likely will be over. Giannis, of course, leading the Bucks, 24.7 points per game, 16 rebounds, 5.3 assists. Jimmy Butler, of course, leading for Miami, 15.3 points, 6.7 rebounds, 6 assists. No shocks there with those two leading the stats categories. In terms of series averages, Milwaukee does control all three stats pretty significantly. Milwaukee's going to close this out. It's not going to be a series. This will be the second shutout prediction. Series sweep prediction of the playoffs so far. Nothing really else to talk about in that series. So we're going to go ahead and move on to the one game, the one series in the Eastern Conference that's actually a good series. And it's kind of what I talked about last week, and that's the 4-seed New York Knicks and the 5-seed Atlanta Hawks. Atlanta does currently lead the series 2-1. They won game one by 2 points. New York won game two by 9 points. And then Atlanta won game three by 11 points. So it's going back and forth. They play again tomorrow. The fact that it is 2-1, I would say there's a very good chance that this goes a full seven games. And that's going to be my prediction, that this game does go the full seven games. For the series leaders, a little shocking. Derrick Rose actually leads the New York Knicks. And I say that shocking because he's not a starter. He is, at least he hasn't been through, the regular season. He's been coming off the bench. But he's averaging 24.3 points a game, 5 rebounds, 4.7 assists. Trae Young, of course, leading Atlanta with 27.7 points, 3 rebounds, 10.3 assists per game. I actually want to look at the stats for this series, because I'm curious with the Knicks how their guys are actually playing. So it actually looks like if Derrick Rose is not starting, he is coming off the bench almost immediately, because he actually is averaging the most points, the most minutes per game on the team, even ahead of Julius Randle. So, yeah, I would say he's definitely starting. So then that takes the shock factor away. Julius Randle, in case you're wondering, 14.7 points, 11.7 rebounds, 3.3 assists. So the reason Derrick Rose is considered the leader is just because of the significant improvement or increase in points per game, would be my guess. RJ Barrett averaging 11.3, 7.7 rebounds, 2.0 assists. I like to know that. RJ Barrett, the young and upcomer. Let's see. As far as series averages, Atlanta controls points by 1.3. New York controls rebounds, and Atlanta controls assists. So kind of a back and forth even there. All right. Let's go now to the West. And let's start with the 1 seed Jazz against the 8 seed Grizzlies. So they are currently through 2 games, and the series is actually tied 1-1. So they play game 3 later tonight, and then game 4 on Monday night. So Memphis actually won game 1 by 3 points, and then Utah came back in game 2 and won by 12 points. So this is actually a closer series than many expected. Ja Morant has a lot to do with that. But interesting note for the series leader. So Mike Conley is actually the series leader for the Jazz, of course, playing against his team, his old team, the Memphis Grizzlies. Drafted by them, played most of his career there, and now playing over in Utah. So Conley is averaging 21 points per game, 5 rebounds, 13 assists. Ja Morant, 36.5 points, 4 rebounds, 5.5 assists. And interesting to note, Utah actually controls the series averages in points, rebounds, and assists. Pretty significantly. The points is the closest one by 5, or by 4.5, I guess. Let's see. My prediction for this one, I'm going to say this goes 5. I'm going to say this goes 6. I'm going to say this goes 6. Utah is going to win the series 4-2. I think Memphis wins one more game, which forces game 6. If they don't win tonight, they'll win Monday night. And then Utah will control the rest of the series. That's my prediction. We'll see how it goes. But I think Ja Morant is not going to go down without a fight. All right, moving on to the 2 seed in the West. So we're going to talk some Phoenix Suns, LA Lakers. This is the series that I said that my official prediction was the Suns winning it. But I did note that if the Lakers won this series, the most likely they would end up at least making the finals, if not winning the championship. Almost positive that's what I said last week. So looking at the series, the Lakers do lead 2-1. Phoenix won game 1 by 9. The Lakers won game 2 by 7. And the Lakers won game 3 by 14. Devin Booker being the leader for Suns, 28 points, 4 rebounds, 5.7 assists. AD leading the Lakers, 27 points, 9.3 rebounds, 3 assists. The Lakers control points, rebounds, and then the Suns control the assists. Moving. Oh, and my prediction, I think this game goes 7. I think Phoenix will win. Or I'm sorry, 6. This series will go 6 games. Phoenix will win one more, and the Lakers will close it out in 6 games. Number 3 seed Portland. Or I'm sorry, number 3 seed Denver against number 6 seed Portland. Denver currently leads 2-1. I think this series goes 6 games because I believe Portland will win one more. However, I'm going to put an asterisk by that because the prediction is that Portland would win tonight and then thus forcing it to go 6 games where Denver will win the remaining 2 games. However, if Portland loses tonight or this afternoon, then it's over. It's done. Denver's going to win in 5, and it's a done deal. I think Portland wins tonight, thus making it a 6-game series. But there is that asterisk. We'll see how it goes. So Portland won game 1 by 14. Denver won game 2 by 9. No, I'm sorry, 19. And then Denver won game 3 by 5. Jokic leading Denver, 36 points, 11.7 rebounds, 3.7 assists. And then, of course, Dame leading Portland, 37.7 points, 2.7 rebounds, 9.3 assists. Denver controls all 3 stats, and that's how that goes. All right, moving on to last game of the playoffs, the 4 seed Clippers and the 5 seed Mavs. Now, what I've been hearing all week on sports radio and everything else, all the morning talk shows, is how the Clippers tank their way into this game. So the Clippers had the chance at the 2 seed, which would have then forced them to play potentially against LeBron and the Lakers, and they lost to get to this game, which they are now losing the series. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I have not done my research on that. I don't know. I haven't looked at it. Either way, they are losing the series to Dallas. My prediction is that this series goes 7 games with Dallas winning. Dallas won game 1 by 10, game 2 by 6, and then the Clippers finally won game 3 by 10. So the Clippers are finally starting to come around. I just don't think there will be enough. I think that Luka holds on and Dallas wins in 7. Kawhi leads the Clippers, 34.3 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. Luka leads the Mavs, 38 points, 8.7 rebounds, 9 assists. The Mavs lead the point category. The Clippers lead rebounds and assists. So that is the predictions there for the first round games. We'll see how it goes. Come next week, obviously, we will know exactly where we stand. Let's look at some fun facts or some interesting facts to note for the playoffs, really the finals mainly. So obviously with the Lakers being in it, there's that chance for that consecutive finals appearances. So I want to look in history how many times this has occurred where teams have made consecutive championships. And it has actually happened. Might be 34. My eyes kind of crossed there from counting all that, but I'm pretty sure it's 33 teams have done it, or teams have done it 33 different times. So the leading team is the Boston Celtics from 1957 to 1966. They were in 10 consecutive finals, and they won 9 championships in that time. Next is Golden State with 5 from 2015 to 2018. That's only 4 years, so okay. they won 3 championships in that time. The Cavs at four during that same time period. One title, the Miami Heat from 2011 to 2014, four consecutive finals, two championships, the 84 to 87 Celtics, and the 82 to 85 Lakers. Both were in four consecutive championships, both won two consecutive titles. And that's the teams that are all four or more. As far as finals rematches, now technically as of this moment, there's still a chance that we have a repeat of the of last year's finals. The Lakers are still alive. The Heat are still alive. Now, as you heard in my predictions, I don't think the Heat will be alive much longer, and thus eliminating the possibility of a finals rematch. But this has happened 14 times. Yeah, 14 different times we've had the same two teams facing off in the championship. Now, from 2015 to 2018, that was a four-year period where we had the same two teams. So technically, it happened a little bit more often. But 14 times, with obviously the most recent being the Warriors and Cavs. Before them, the 2013-2014 Miami Heat, San Antonio Spurs. Obviously, the 97-98 Bulls and Jazz. And the 88-89 Lakers Pistons. Looking at best finishes by playoff seed. So the top four seeds, 1, 2, 3, 4, their best finish has all been winning the championship. The one seed obviously did it last year with the Lakers. The two seed the year before that with the Raptors. The three seed, the Dallas Mavericks in 2011, beating the Miami Heat as the three seed. The four seed was actually the Boston Celtics all the way back in 1969. So if you're a one seed, so you're Utah Jazz, you're Philadelphia 76ers, you're looking to keep that trend of one seeds winning to 2 years. Second, two seeds, so your Phoenix Suns and your Brooklyn Nets are looking to do what Toronto did 2 years ago. Three seed, so if you're the Denver Nuggets or the Milwaukee Bucks, you're looking to do something for the first time since 2011. But if you're a four seed, so if you're the New York Knicks or your LA Clippers, you're looking to win the championship for the first time since 1969 for a four seed. Now, Knicks, I just don't see that happening, being realistic. They're going to have to face the Sixers next round. They're not going to beat the Sixers. So the Clippers, however, if they do beat the Mavs, would then most likely play the Jazz or, by some miracle, Memphis. The Clippers have the team that they could do this. I just don't see it being realistic. And regardless, I don't see the Clippers beating the Nets or the Sixers. So I don't think a four seed is going to win the championship this year. A five seed has never won the NBA Finals. They lost last year, actually. That's their best result, making it to the NBA Finals, the Miami Heat of 2020. The sixth seed, their best result was winning the championship in 1995, the Seattle Supersonic, or I'm sorry, the Houston Rockets. So your sixth seeds this year, Portland, is a possibility. They could potentially do it. And then your sixth seed in the East is your Miami Heat. I've already talked about that. They're not doing it. Seven seeds. So here's our fun fact. No seven seed has ever made the NBA Finals, much less won it. Their best result, they lost the conference finals in 1987. That was the Seattle Supersonics. The fun fact is this year's seven seed is the Lakers. So Lakers could become the first seven seed not only to make the NBA Finals, but possibly win the NBA Finals. So more to come. Obviously, we'll see how that plays out. And then your eight seed has never won an NBA final. Their best result is losing in the finals in 1999, and that's the New York Knicks. Your one seeds have won 48 championships in 90 attempts or 90 appearances. Your two seeds have won 16 championships in 35 appearances. Your three seeds, six championships in 14 appearances. Four seeds, one championship in 5 appearances. Your five seed is 0 for 1. Six seeds are 1 for 2. Seven seeds, again, like I talked about, have never been. and your 8 seed is 0-1. Now, there have been 13 occurrences where no number one seed has made the NBA Finals. Now, of those 13 occurrences, 7 have been in the last 17 years, so since 2004. In 2018, your most recent one, Golden State Cleveland, that was a 2-4, 2 versus 4. 2012, Miami, a 2-seed Miami and a 2-seed Oklahoma City. And 2011, 3-seed Dallas and 2-seed Miami. Last thing I want to talk about regarding the NBA, I want to look at players' championships. So how many championships a player has. And there are 23, I think I counted. Hold on. Yeah, 23 different players that have at least 5 championships. So Bill Russell holds the record. He has 11 championships, all with the Boston Celtics. Sam Jones is right behind him with 10, all with the Celtics also. John Havlicek, 8 championships, all with the Celtics. Casey Jones, 8. Casey Jones, Tom Hinesone, and Tom Sanders all have 8 championships with the Celtics. Frank Ramsey and Jim Loskatoff, 7 championships, all with the Celtics. And then Robert Horry has 7 championships with 3 separate teams. So he has 3 championships with the Lakers, 2 championships with the San Antonio Spurs, and 2 championships with the Houston Rockets. So he was with the Rockets in those 2 years between the Jordan eras. And then he went on to the Lakers, where he was on that Kobe and Shaq three-peat team. And then you've got and then he went to the Spurs with Tim Duncan, Manu. Actually, this would be the Tim Duncan, Manu, Tony Parker era, where they won 2 championships. Bob Cousy with the Celtics has won 6 titles. Kareem has won 6, 5 of which with the Lakers, 1 with the Milwaukee Bucks. Jordan and Pippen both have 6, all, of course, with the Bulls. Rodman has 5 with the Bulls. He has 5, 3 with the Bulls and 2 with the Pistons. Derek Fisher, 5 with the Lakers. Don Nelson, 5 with the Celtics. Kobe, of course, 5 with the Lakers. Larry Siegfried, 5 with the Celtics. Magic, 5 with the Lakers. Michael Cooper, 5 with the Lakers. Ron Harper has 3 with the Bulls, 2 with the Lakers. So he was with that second Jordan three-peat, as well as the part of the two-peat with Kobe. So Harper is the only one that has won championships with both Kobe and Jordan. Slater Martin won 4 with the Minneapolis Lakers and 1 with the St. Louis Hawks. And then Steve Kerr, 3 with the Bulls and 2 with the Spurs, not counting his 3, I think, with the Warriors. So as a player, he has 5. As a coach, he has 3. Just kind of glancing through here. Oh, I was wrong. Horace Grant was another one that played with both Jordan and Kobe. He won 3 with Jordan in the first three-peat, and then he won 1 with Kobe and the Lakers. John Sally also won 1 with the Bulls with Jordan, 1 with the Lakers with Kobe. LeBron has 4. Two with the Heat and 1 with the Lakers. Shaq has 3 with the Lakers, 1 with the Heat. Duncan has 5 with the Spurs. I don't know why he's this far down the list. It's actually 24 players that have 5 or more. And then on down from there, notable players, you got Larry Bird with three, Sam Cassell with three. Yeah, and I'll end it there. So that is your NBA championships by player. I'm going to take a break. I will be right back. We'll jump right into baseball. And welcome back. And as I said, we are going to jump right into Major League Baseball. So first, let's look at the standings. So as I've done, in case this is your first episode listening to me every week, I do what the Major League Baseball playoffs would look like if the season ended right now. So we're in week eight. This is the eighth time I've done this. So let's look at the American League. So Tampa Bay actually has the best record in the American League. So Tampa has that one seed. So last week they were in the five seed, the first wild card spot. And the week before that, they weren't even in the playoffs. So a big turnaround for Tampa. That means the two seed would then be Chicago. So they fall from, actually they hold the two seed. So they were the two seed last week. And then Oakland still has the three seed. So that game doesn't change. Oakland has been the three seed for the last, this is 3 weeks in a row now at least. And then your wild card teams, you've got the Red Sox. So Boston, pretty much Boston and Tampa just switched spots this week. And your second wild card team is actually going to be the Yankees. So this is the first time in weeks that the Yankees have been in the playoffs. And we have three teams from the East. All right, let's look at the National League. So the one seed is the Padres. So the Padres finally unseat the Giants. The Giants have been the one seed for multiple weeks. And the Padres have been the five seed for as many weeks, most likely. I'm pretty sure. So the Cardinals have the two seed again, and the Mets still have the three seed. So that game doesn't change. Your wild card game then would be the Dodgers and the Giants. All right, so my prediction for the World Series out of this, so I take the teams that are currently in the playoffs. And then I predict who I think out of those teams would go to the World Series. So this week, I'm going to go with Tampa and San Diego. I think that would be a fun game, a fun series to watch. Both teams are young. Obviously, San Diego, with the star power they have, I think that would be a blast to see. Glancing through here, keep an eye on Toronto. I have a feeling they're going to start working their way up the standings. And that could mean trouble for the Red Sox, the Yankees potentially. I could see that being an issue for them. Because in order to move up, Toronto would have to unseat one of those two teams. In the Central, the Indians have really come a long way. However, I don't think it'll be enough to unseat Chicago. I think Chicago is going to start running away with that division. In the West, keep an eye on the Mariners. They're making a little bit of movement. I could see the Angels flipping this thing around real quick. They get Mike Trout back. That'll be a big help to them. But we'll have to wait and see. Other than that, Oakland is running away with that division. Over in the National League, the Braves are finally starting to make some moves. They're going to start challenging in that division. I do believe that. That division is the worst in baseball right now. With the winning team, the leading team, the Mets being 24-20. And that's with winning three straight games. So there could be some movement here very easily. And side note, the Braves have as many wins as the Mets. They just have 5 more losses because they played more games. So we'll see how all that works itself out. But Atlanta, Philly, both looking to challenge the Mets here soon. In the Central, the Cardinals are still leading that, but the Cubs are only a half game back. The Cubs are on fire lately, and have really fought back. Milwaukee is sitting at 500. The Reds are now 5 games under 500. They're coming back down to earth a little bit, I think. And so being where they're at there is pretty much what's expected of them. Out in the West, I mean, we're back to the Padres and Dodgers being the top two. I think that's going to stay like that the rest of the season. I think the Giants are going to start falling. Probably no worse. You know, they're not going to fall like fourth and fifth. They're just going to start falling in record. I think the Rockies and Diamondbacks are definitely the worst teams in that division, with the Giants being in that number three team. So we'll see the Padres and Dodgers pretty much battle it out the rest of the season there. All right. Let's look at – before we go into this day in baseball, because that is something I want to do, I wanted to look – so we looked at the NBA playoffs. We looked at consecutive playoffs. We looked at things like that. I want to look at Major League Baseball, and first I want to look at stat leaders. This is something that was intriguing to me. I did have some interest in this. I wanted to see where people sat. And so what I want to look at first is career leaders. And I want to look at who is the highest active player in these categories. So for batters, we're going to look at batting average, home runs, and RBIs. We'll look at stolen bases too. So we'll look at 4 categories here. Might look at more, I'm not sure. But we're going to start in batting average for career. So Ty Cobb, 366. Rogers Hornsby, 358. Joe Jackson, 356. Ed Delahanty, 346. And Tris Speaker at 345. This can't be right. This can't. So I'm trying to look at something right now, and this is going to blow my mind if it's true. Okay, it's not true. I had to look because the number 6 player for career batting average was Billy Hamilton. I'm like, it's not. It cannot be. Because the Billy Hamilton I know does not have a high batting average. And it's not. This is a Billy Hamilton from back in the 1800s. Early 1900s, maybe. Most likely late. Right around when baseball started, pretty much. Ted Williams tied for 6th. Babe Ruth tied for 8th. So let's scroll down through here for current active player, which is going to be harder because obviously they're still playing. So we can't really talk about active players because they're still active. So you can't really give a final number for that. But there's guys like Tony Gwynn on here who's 16th all time. Stan Musial tied for 25th all time. Jimmy Fox tied for 33rd along with Joe DiMaggio. Wade Boggs is tied for 30th. Kirby Puckett and Vlad Guerrero are both tied for 48th. All right, let's look at home runs. Obviously, we know Barry Bonds with an asterisk is the home run leader at 762. Hank Aaron at 2 with 755. Babe Ruth with 714. A-Rod with 696. And Albert Pujols with 668 currently. Now, Albert Pujols is obviously being still active. If he played another 2... Let's see. So he needs 29 home runs to pass A-Rod. And he needs 47 to pass Babe Ruth. So if Albert Pujols played all this year and next year, I could see him passing number three all time in home runs. It's very possible. I'm not sure how many home runs he has this year, but he needs 47 in 2 years. So he needs 24 each year, which I feel like for Albert Pujols is doable. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Willie Mays is 6, Griffey at 7, Tomy at 8, Sosa at 9, Frank Robinson at 10, McGuire down at 11. So the next active player is all the way down at number 30, and that's Miguel Cabrera at 491. So this season, obviously, he should be able to pass 500. That would move him up to 3 spots. Let's see, if he gets an additional 30 home runs. Let's say 25. Let's say 25 home runs. So that would put him at 516. That would move him up. So he's currently 30th. That would move him up to 23rd all time. Not bad. If he hits another 31, he'll be up in the top 20. After him, there's no other current active player in the top 50. So that is a crazy thought. Let's look at the next 50 real quick. So I want to see where the next player is after Miguel Cabrera. No, okay, so Nelson Cruz is sitting at 51. And there's not another active player in the top 100. So we've got a while to wait till some of these players get up there. All right, let's look at RBIs all time. Hank Aaron leads with 2,297. Albert Pujols is number 2 at 2,117. So he needs another 181 to take the all-time lead in RBIs. Alex Rodriguez is 3rd. And those are the only 3 players with 2,000-plus RBIs. Barry Bonds sits at 4th with 1,996. Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth, Stan Musial, Jimmy Fox, Eddie Murray, Willie Mays round out the top 10. Miguel Cabrera is sitting at 21. He should be able to break the top 20 this year. And that is it for active players in the top 50. Okay, let's look at actually, I want to look at one thing here. So your top 4 home run leaders all played 22 seasons, except for Hank Aaron played 23. Albert Pujols, who's number 5, is sitting at 20 seasons. So if he plays another 3 seasons like Hank Aaron did, he could easily be number 3 in the all-time list, potentially even break past Hank Aaron. Obviously, he would need, well, no, because if he played 3 seasons, he would need 3 more full years, not counting this year. He is 88 behind Aaron. So that's doable, guys. Again, I don't know where he sits this year. But if he hits another 20, say another 20 this year, that puts him at 688. He would need 68 in 3 years. It's about 22 a year, 23 a year. That's doable. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but it's definitely a possibility. Let's see. Let's look at who has the most hits. We obviously know number 1 is the good old Pete Rose with 4256. Ty Cobb behind him at 41.89. Albert Pujols sits 12th, and he is 97 behind Pete Rose. And then Miguel Cabrera at 41. No other player in the top 50, of course. Doubles. Let's look at who has the most doubles in history. And we'll move on here in one second. Tris Speaker with 792 doubles. And the last thing I wanted to look at here, there's actually an additional active player in the top 50, and that's Robinson Cano, sits at 27th. So I want to look at who has struck out the most. Now, this should be an interesting. So Reggie Jackson, followed by Jim Thome, followed by, here you go, Reds fans, Adam Dunn. Adam Dunn is number 3 all-time in strikeouts. And we all know that because we lived the days of Adam Dunn, feast or famine, strikeout galore, or hitting it to the river. Okay, not fully, but you know. Yeah, that does not surprise me. Sammy Sosa, 4th. Alex Rodriguez, 5th. Andres Galarraga, 6th. And those 6 players are the only 6 players that have more than 2,000 strikeouts in their careers. Active players, Justin Upton is the top active player at 12th. Miguel Cabrera at 17th. And Nelson Cruz at 42nd. And that's your top 50. So that's your career leaders. Let me run through some single season records real quick before I move on. Actually, you know what? We're gonna do that another time. We'll look at single season records another day, because I want to get to these other things today. I might do next episode. Yeah, next episode, I'm going to run through some Cincinnati Reds franchise facts. So we'll talk things like managers. We'll talk about no hitters, cycle hitters, just different accomplishments for the Cincinnati Reds franchise. And we'll do that most likely next episode. But as I mentioned this episode, I want to do today in baseball history. So I want to run through some facts of things that happened in Major League Baseball on May 29th. The first one dating back to 1905, according to legend, Dodger hurler Elmer Stricklett introduces the spitball, helping Brooklyn to beat the Giants 4-3. That's 1905. By 1921, the spitball will be banned, except for 17 existing spitballers who were allowed to keep throwing the pitch legally until they retired, including Burley Grimes, who was the last player to throw a doctored pitch before retiring in 1934 legally. So, who introduced the spitball? Elmer Stricklett for the Brooklyn Dodgers. Who was the last pitcher to legally throw a spitball? Burley Grimes, before he retired in 1934. In 1909, recently elected President William Howard Taft joins 14,000 fans at Pittsburgh's Exposition Park to watch the Pirates play the Cubs, becoming the first sitting president to attend a baseball game outside of Washington, D.C. Pittsburgh lost 8-3, marking the only time the team loses in a span of 19 games. 2 years later, in 1911, riding the Pennsylvania Railroad, the Cubs complete their 191-mile journey from Columbus, Ohio, to their game in Pittsburgh in 3 hours and 35 minutes. The trip, which set a land speed record, lasted 75 minutes longer than the time it took the Cubs to beat the Pirates at Forbes Field 4-1. So that's interesting. Their train ride from Columbus to Pittsburgh took longer than it took to actually play the game they were playing. In 1916, the Giants beat Boston for their 17th consecutive road win, surpassing, that's the New York Giants, surpassing the major league mark set by the Senators, who had won 16 straight games as a visiting team in 1912. Let's see. In 1928 at Ebbets Field, Bill Terry hits for the cycle to pace the Giants to a 12-5 victory over the Robins, who would become the Dodgers. The New York first baseman is the first player in Major League history to include a grand slam as part of the cycle. So that's a fun fact. Most of your cycles, obviously you have your single, your double, your triple, and then some kind of home run, whether it be a solo, a two-run, a three-run, or a grand slam. Bill Terry was the first player to hit the cycle by hitting a grand slam. All right, 1941. The Cardinals collected their 10th consecutive win thanks to a spectacular grab by Marty Marion of Ernie Lombardi's line drive. It was the Cardinals' fifth straight one-run winning decision, including three back-to-back games decided in the team's last at-bat. Let's see. Let's scroll down here a little bit. 1951, Indians general manager Hank Greenberg flies to Winston-Salem, North Carolina to personally preside over the signing ceremony of Billy Joe Davidson, a 17-year-old American Legion standout. The Southpaw, who reportedly agreed to $150,000 deal to play for the Indians, compiled a career 54-53 record, including one no-hitter during his 6 years in the minors, but never played a game in the major leagues. So that backfired for him. 1956, Gus Bell connects for three consecutive home runs, helping the Reds beat the Cubs. The center fielder collects 14 total bases, going 5-for-5 while collecting 7 RBIs in the Wrigley Field contest. So that's pretty neat. Three consecutive home runs for Gus Bell. 1965, Dick Allen hit a 529-foot home run, clearing the left center field roof over the Coke sign at Connie Mack Stadium. The Phillies third baseman's two-run prodigious poke off of Chicago's right-hander Larry Jackson proves to be the difference in a 4-2 victory. So Dick Allen hit a 529-foot home run out left center that cleared the roof and went over the Coke sign at Connie Mack Stadium. In 1966, Ron Santo delivered a walk-off home run for the second consecutive day in extra innings, beating Atlanta with a 10th inning blast, giving them a 3-2 victory at Wrigley. The day before, he ended the game with a 3-run 12th inning home run, beating the Braves 8-5. 1976, this is probably one of the most interesting notes I've seen on this entire thing. In 1976, brothers Joe Niekro and Phil Niekro faced off against each other. As Joe played with the Astros, Phil played with the Braves. Joe's Astros won the game 4-1. And to add insult to injury, Joe hit his first and only home run in his 22-year career off of his older brother. That's a fun fact. Something that provides spark to a sibling rivalry, I'm sure. So to say, not only did you and your team beat your brother's team, but you hit your only home run of your career off of your brother. In In 1978, in a 14-inning, one-run loss to Pittsburgh, Phillies outfielder Gary Maddux ties a franchise record when he steals four bases. It equals the mark set in 1906 by Sherry McGee, who accomplished the feat twice that season. So that's some speed right there. In 1979, the Dodgers set a record by hitting seven home runs. Dusty Baker, Rick Sutcliffe, Steve Garvey, Gary Thomason, Darrell Thompson, Joe Ferguson, and Davey Lopes all homered against the Reds. Interesting note there, Dusty Baker eventually becoming the Reds manager. In 1982, Paul Splittorff pitches eight solid innings in the Royals' 14-1 rout of Texas at Arlington Stadium. The Southpaw's victory makes him the all-time franchise leader with 145 wins, one more than Dennis Leonard. Cool. In 1985, the Phillies move Gold Glove third baseman Mike Schmidt to first base, replacing him at the hot corner with Rick Shue. The 23-year-old rookie hit only 252, promoting Mike Schmidt's return to third the next season, with Shue becoming a backup for the future Hall of Fame infielder. 4 years later, in a hastily called press conference, Mike Schmidt tearfully informs of his retirement, which is effective immediately. The Phillies third baseman, nonetheless, was still selected by the fans to start the All-Star game, scheduled to be played in Anaheim in July. In 1990, on this date, May 29th, A's Ricky Henderson steals third base, breaking the 62-year-old American League stolen base record of 892 held by Ty Cobb. So that might be the most important note of this entire thing. So Ricky Henderson becomes the all-time stolen base. The all-time stolen base leader on this date in 1990. In 1994, the Braves deal outfielder Deion Sanders to the Reds for outfielder Roberto Kelly and minor leaguer Roger Etheridge, who never appeared in a major league game. Kelly remained in Atlanta only for that season, batting .286 in 63 games. Deion stayed with Cincinnati for 4 years, compiling a .260 average for the Reds. So I remember the days watching Deion play for the Reds, and that was a really neat time. In 1996, Cal Ripken hits his 334th career round-tripper, 334th home run, to move past Eddie Murray for first place in the Orioles' all-time list. The Baltimore shortstop goes deep over left field wall off of Sterling Hitchcock in the sixth inning of the team's defeat to Seattle at the Kingdom. So, records being broken on May 29th. In the year 2000 at Yankee Stadium, Randy Velarde completes the 10th unassisted triple play in Major League history. With runners on first and second, Shane Spencer hits a line drive to the second baseman, who catches the ball, tags out Jorge Posada coming from first base, and steps on second, tripling up Tino Martinez, who took off for third to complete the rare event. Again, another fun fact, that was during the height of the Yankees' dominance. In the year 2000, at the age of 104, Fred Roberts, the oldest living Dodger fan, makes his first visit to Dodger Stadium, wearing a jersey with the number 104. The World War I veteran cheers as Sean Green's sixth inning grand slam helps to beat Al Leiter, and the Mets 4-1. That's a pretty neat fact. You're 104 years old, you go to your first Dodgers game and see them win while wearing a special jersey. Now, I'm going to run out of time before I get to all of these. In 2002, Roger Clemens becomes the third major leaguer to strike out 10 or more batters in at least 100 games, Nolan Ryan and Randy Johnson being the only other two players to do that. In 2010, on this date in history, Roy Halladay throws the 20th perfect game in Major League history. And that's going to do it, because I'm going to run out of time before I say any more of these. So thank you for listening. Make sure to follow me on Instagram, Rounding Third Sports. I'll be back next week for another episode. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you guys again next week. Have a great week.